very happy new year to you and yours. And thank you for joining me for another episode of the Girl Unlimited podcast. We're at episode 16. This year promises to be an exciting one, both for me and my family. For one, we are now fully a home educating family with plans to do a lot of our education outside the home. I also started a year-long writing challenge with a tiny bunch of ladies, as crazy I am to be attempting to do this. And finally, my little nonfiction book club, Goldmines, reset for another year, and we welcomed a few new members. And speaking of the book club, our December book of the month was the New York Times bestseller by Simon Sinek, titled Start With Why. I'm sure a bunch of you probably have read the book already because it's not new. But it's the first time I was reading it. And this book made me not only reflect deeply on the purpose of this podcast and, in truth, my life, but it refueled me with a deep-seated passion for why I chose to start a podcast dedicated to women maximizing their potential and living out their dreams and God-given purpose, and how to get better at communicating that why. Why? Because I don't want any ambiguity regarding what we are trying to do here. We're trying to shake people awake, especially women, to know that there's more to their lives. I believe so strongly that every one of us was created for a purpose and with a unique set of giftings and talents, and that only you can do that special work you were called to do. And nobody knows this better than my guest today. Catherine Longyi is the Chief Communication Officer at a phenomenal organization called GIFU, which stands for the Global Institute for Evolving Women. And honestly, I've been a member of GIFU's Facebook group for almost a year now, and I can categorically say that they, like Catherine, truly embody the word global. Catherine herself is a perfect ambassador to the globalness, as it were. Having seen a lot of her Facebook lives, where that's within the GIFU Facebook group, where she introduces herself as Catherine, an American living in London and married to an Italian. I absolutely love that. Through her own GIFU education starting in 2015, she discovered her purpose in life is to lead and heal the feminine. She joined the GIFU team in 2017 as a vehicle for fulfilling her purpose and creating her own legacy. She's a former corporate diversity and inclusion consultant, author, and transformational coach who helps women in using their talents, passion, and purpose to build sustainable social enterprises. So the interview you're about to listen to right now, I interviewed with Catherine late last year. And from the very start of the interview, guys, you won't need anyone to tell you that this woman was born to coach. I mean, I felt like I was in a mini coaching session at one point. I love that while others talk about finding and walking in their purpose, she talks about being your purpose, or your purpose being a state of being instead of a state of doing. And those are my own words. My favorite bit of the interview was when she began talking about plurking. I asked her about plurking, and we began to have a short conversation on plurking. And you would have to listen to the interview to know exactly what that word means. And guys, just seeing how aligned her purpose and that of GIFU is with what we're trying to do here at Girl Unlimited made this interview one of my best yet, and to me, the perfect note to start 2022. If you've struggled with finding your purpose or following it, Catherine drops some really, really good gems in this episode that I am confident will help you. My name is Tiari, and this is the Girl Unlimited podcast.
Weapon.
Oh, hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for coming on the Girl Unlimited podcast.
Thank you. So good to be here.
We were just talking before I pressed record about homeschooling and what did you call it?
Virtual world schooling.
Virtual world schooling. That's just amazing. I was telling you that I was talking about, I was thinking of homeschooling on my walk this morning because I was listening to this book called Icarus Deception. I don't know if you've heard of it, by Seth Godin. And he was talking about, he was talking a lot about different things in creativity and artistry and how everyone is an artist. And I just kept thinking, I was like, oh, and then he was talking about how obviously the industrialization of the world and, you know, the world system and everything, and how, you know, even the school system is, you know, aligned with the industrial system and way of thinking. And I just kept thinking, I was like, oh, I wish I could, you know, pull my children out of school. And we started talking about homeschooling. And he said, no. Who wants to be stuck at home?
I was homeschooled. So I am, as a ballerina, like I wasn't homeschooled myself, but there were kids I danced with that were homeschooled, and they were really freaking weird. So homeschooling used to be a sort of like alternative, you know, outside the box, you know, maybe kind of hippie-ish parents who were all like, you know, let's not conform kind of thing. And actually, with the rise of digital nomads, like, parents these days are now digital entrepreneurs, and they don't want to stay in one place with the kids. Like, they don't want to be tied down, and you can take your kids on and have amazing experiences, and they can go to school from any internet point.
That is just amazing. And the more I think about it, the more excited I am, and the more I'm thinking and hoping that I can put it, because obviously, as I said to you, I want our family to travel. I mean, it's one of my biggest dreams. And like you said, it doesn't have to be, you know, put into a box into just 1 year. It can just become a lifestyle. Why not?
Yeah. Show your kids the world, and then they can decide where and how they want to live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, I was just thinking, I was like, knowing who you are, and I mean, our first meeting, I mean, the first two times we met was over WhatsApp video. And I remember, you know, apart from your bright smile and your warmth, another thing that drew me to you was your insistence in calling me Tosse, which our listeners, if they remember my introductory episode, remember that is the fuller version of my name. So T-R-E is really just my stage name. Tosse, or Tosegene, is actually my name. And the fact that you insisted on calling me Tosse just made me feel more connected to you, and made me know that you wanted to be more connected to me. And I know that's a very huge part of who you are and what you do. So just tell us, what was early years for Catherine like? You know, I know you grew up in America. What was that like? Would you have known that you'd be doing what you're doing now from that time?
No, absolutely not. And Tosse, thank you for that acknowledgement. And you have such a beautiful name. And the reason why I wanted to call you your name is because when I asked you and really pushed you, what do you want to be called? You had all these reasons for why you should be called other things. And I went, no, what do you want to be called? And you're like, well, actually, I quite like my name. I was like, I do too. Let's call you Tosse. That's your name. So I did not know. So growing up in suburban America, Maine, USA, my biggest dream was always just continuing to elevate my dream. So when my parents put me in activities, from piano lessons to ballet classes to gymnastics, I just always wanted to try new things, try new stuff. And then as I grew older and older, it just became, okay, well, I'm going to really focus on ballet now. You know, I really want to focus on performing. And then it was, how can I do this while at university? So it was just keep growing the dream, taking action, and just keep expanding. And my love of travel in Europe originated from my 16th birthday. My parents gifted, which in America is a big thing, they call it Sweet 16. There was a 1980s movie with Molly Ringwald. It's a thing, 16th birthdays in America. So they gifted me a trip, a high school trip to Paris and London. And that was like drug. It was like my first drag on a cigarette or something, you know, like my first drink, my first drugs, my first like, oh, this cannot be the only time. Like, this is not a one-off. This isn't just for my birthday. And then after that, increasingly more, you know, the next year, I wanted to go again. And they were like, what is wrong with you? We bought you a Europe trip. It's like a once in a lifetime thing. And I was like, oh no, it's not a once in a lifetime thing, parents. Oh. And I borrowed $2,000, which in 1997 for teenagers was like an astronomical amount of money. Yes. But I had a friend, Carla. Thank you, Carla, if you're listening, who was a saver. I was not a saver. So I borrowed, and she didn't even charge me interest, which was really nice of her. I borrowed and over a year paid her back just to fund my second trip. And then it just kind of rolled from there. Increase your vision, take action, do something new, increase your vision, take action, do something new. And it just grew from there.
Wow. So did you go to Paris again the next year, or was it somewhere else?
The second trip was Paris was repeated. It was Paris, Rome, and Madrid. No, yes, Madrid. Paris, Rome, and Madrid, second time.
Mm-hmm. And at 16, I guess you can travel on a company, can't you?
That was also a school organized trip, different school, different trip, different destinations. I was not a solo traveler at 17. No.
I wonder, because I was like, oh my goodness,
that's illegal.
Would have really been brave. So what was it about ballet that drew you in? So I know you said you wanted to perform. What was it about ballet?
It was seeing with my eyes the first ballet I saw, which I think was Nutcracker 1985 or something. That probably would have been the first ballet I ever saw. So it was seeing something and being curious, you know, what's that like? Like, I want to try that. And just continuing to look at, you know, who my role model, like looking up to the older dancers and seeing what they were doing and emulating them and practicing and, you know, learning, growing. And I can't say why ballet, you know, why did I let the piano lessons go out of existence? Why did I choose ballet over gymnastics? I can't really say. It was just like a calling. I just felt drawn and called and just wanted to keep going.
Wow. And you made a comeback again really recently. In fact, we attended your first Zoom Bolero Zoom Ballet. That was the piece that you put together last Saturday, and it was incredible. I was like, this is, according to you, this was like 20 years after. So you are 41 now, if you don't mind me saying, and yes. You've come back after 20 years. That's incredible. Why? And you even founded a digital dance school, which is
yeah. So probably like a lot of you listening out there, when you're young, you know, you're encouraged to dream. It's like the dream phase. And then as you get older and older, people who are older than you tell you, oh, it's time to get, see, like, it's time to get real. It's time to, you know, stop doing the fun stuff. It's time to work hard. It's time to have a proper career. It's time to get married. Mm. It's time to have a family. It's time. And then what? And you die. Mm. Like, this is not a recipe for success. This is not a recipe for life fulfillment, you know, and enjoyment and quality of life, is it? So I just let that part of me die. I let that creative expression just die. I just let it die. You know, I got swept up with life and what other people said I should be doing. And, you know, I trusted them and listened to them and followed them. And
don't we all?
I mean, yeah, it's sad. It's sad to let your dreams die. It's really, really sad. And if you can rescue them, when was the first moment? So in the pandemic, a month after, so April 2020, I attended my first ever Zoom Shakespeare. So a UK wow. theater company, I think they're called The Creative. I want to give them credit. The Creative Theater Company, it's a UK based performing group, theater group. They put on Shakespeare's Tempest on Zoom. And when I heard about this, I was thinking, is that possible? So I bought a ticket because I really just couldn't believe it was possible to do live theater on Zoom. So I bought a ticket to see with my very own eyes. And what I saw with my very own eyes was shocking. Not only was it possible, it in a lot of ways was better than live theater.
Oh my goodness. You need to tell me, what do you mean by better? How? I can't even imagine it in
my head.
More
interactive. So more interactive. There was audience participation.
Of course.
You could change settings because you can change Zoom backgrounds. You can have actors playing multiple characters with different backgrounds. And you're like a part of it. You're actually on the stage with the actors as opposed to being distanced, like sitting out in the audience. Now, are there ways that live theater is better? Yes. And I was shocked that in some ways Zoom theater could be not only as good, but even better. So as the pandemic continued, I thought to myself, well, if you can do Zoom theater, can you do Zoom ballet? I don't know. Can you? So I let this idea rattle around in my head for 6 months. And then early this year, I got the idea for what the piece could be, Bolero. If any of you are figure skating fans out there, this was the 1984 Torval and Dean. They won the gold medal like ice dancing to Bolero. So it's a really well-known piece. It's 15 minutes long, and it starts very quietly and ends with a bang. And I had danced this piece in the 90s on a live stage with seven other female dancers. So I knew, like, I already had a not a template as such, but I had an idea of what was possible on stage. And I wanted to see not if we could take it from the stage and put it on Zoom like the Shakespeare Company had done, but if we could actually just create a purely female creation.
So you had
with
a framework.
Female dancers on Zoom. Yeah. Like a framework, guideposts, you know, like this bit is possible. Now can we create within it? And yeah, you saw the production on Saturday. So I was really shocked. I mean, I had no idea, Tose, no idea. I thought to myself, this is either going to be diabolically bad or diabolically good. And I have no idea which way it's going to go because I don't think it's going to go. I don't think you're going to be lukewarm. I think you're going to go one way or the other. I don't think
like
this is like a fence sitting kind of scenario here. And I didn't know which way it was going to go. So the fact that it went diabolically well and not what I could have expected was just as any creative or visionary, when you actually see your creations come to life and you can watch it and see it with your own eyes, it's just one of the best feelings in the world to go, oh my God, a year ago it was just in here and now it's out there and people are enjoying it and they're inspired by it and they're touched by it, they're moved by it, and the dancers have made money off of it, and you know, it's just like it's just a tremendous feeling.
The perfect feeling. But is that not what art is? Art is beautiful and courageous and scary and daring and, you know, just, and vulnerable, just putting your art out there, not knowing which way it's going to go. Incredible. And I was there, so I saw it, and I knew you guys had technical issues to start with, but you smiled through it, which was just amazing. To me, it just showed a level of, I guess, emotional intelligence you would attain, because I know a lot of people who probably would have been flustered by that or probably would have been discouraged by that. But you didn't allow a few minutes, you know, because you said we're going to start dead at 7, but you didn't allow a few minutes to ruin the whole experience. And like you said, people were touched by it, and I was pleasantly surprised. In fact, if I'm honest with you, one of the reasons I attended was because I didn't know how this was going to be pulled off. I've attended, you know, obviously stage performances, and you were saying you were going to be performing live. I remember your video. You said we're going to be this is going to be live. It's not going to be recorded. So I was like, I need to see this. So, and I attended and gladly paid a little, you know, little something. And just knowing that people can do not only, you know, gift us with their art, but also get something in return. That for me is the epitome of everything. I'm a big believer of the fact that you should, you know, you should make money doing what you love. And I wanted us to talk about that actually, because I know that's something that's your big proponent of that with your work with GFU and all. And we'll come to GFU soon, but how do you think people can, women especially, can make that transition from, you know, you were in corporate, you know, in the corporate world, and transition to doing work that they love and get paid for it?
I'm going to answer that and lead in that direction with something else, because okay. I wanted to share my big why. Mm. So why did I create a virtual Bolero Zoom ballet, apart from, you know, wanting to make a ballerina comeback 20 years after I stopped? Like, because that was wouldn't that be fun? It started out as, wouldn't that be fun for me? Mm. But the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I shared about it, the more and more I got committed that, you know what, if this little experiment pays off, this is potentially a new model for creatives to earn a living, to earn an income doing what they do. And myself, having been one of those part of the mass, part of the 99% that don't make it to be professional dancers, because only 1% can make it in the current model, the model of applying for dance companies, and less than 1% make it into a dance company. And then maybe they have 10 or 15 years of a career until they become teachers and choreographers and other stuff, because that, you know, ballerinas retire at like 30, 35. So the why, and I'm leading into the how.
Yeah, yeah.
But the why, when your why is so compelling, not just for yourself, because I had my own personal why. I want to make a comeback. Like, it's so fun, you know, I want to be expressed. And when the why becomes bigger than you, then you're compelled to do it, because you can't not do it, because it's bigger than you. And now other people have a stake in it too. So there, I'm not going to be lying, there are 5 or 6 moments this summer where I thought of chucking it all in. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to happen. It's too hard. 5 or 6 times this summer. Oh, wow. I was so close to throwing in the towel. And what kept me going is, yeah, but I want these dancers to have this opportunity. It's not just for me. I want, you know, 20 something old dancers who are either still in their education or are waiting tables and are trying to make it. I want them to have an opportunity to be rewarded for the contribution they make through their art form. So in answer to your question, you know, how did it go? What did I learn along the way? How did I leave corporate? Like, the first thing is to understand that if you're going to shift from a completely different structure. So when you have a job, any kind of job, corporate job, not corporate job, but just a job, when you have a job, that game, that system is a likability game. You keep and get jobs based on how people feel about you. Now, I know this is shocking and not what you've heard. And I'm a former HR director. So believe me, I would be the first person that should be telling you, oh, it's about your skills and your resume and, you know, how you communicate those skills and what you've learned and your experience. Like, that's what people will tell you. But it's not the case. The employability game is a likability game. So if you've made it there, like, great, you're likable. And if you're finding it challenging there, and maybe you're getting fired. I was fired 3 times before I got, this is not the system for me. I just had to be fired 3 times to understand that. But most people have challenges in this system, okay? So, you know, have kindness and compassion for yourself, and also just understand it's about being likable. And some people are going to like you and some people not going to like you, and you can't help that. So just, you know, just surrender if you want to stay in that system. You know, if you feel like that system is for you, or like, or it's too scary to be an entrepreneur, or you don't have other alternatives, great. Like, stay in the system. but now I've given you the key to survive the system. And so you don't sweat the small stuff. Like, it's like, it's about being likable, and some people are going to like you and some people aren't going to like you. And sometimes you like people and sometimes you don't like people. So just like, that's just what it is. So, you know, surrender and be happy. And for those of you who are like, no, this system is not for me. Okay. So I was one of those people, but the challenge in the move that you make, the first thing you do after a job or after a corporate career, your biggest challenge is that you know nothing about entrepreneurship, nothing. Nothing. And it doesn't matter how long you've studied it for. So I had like a business coach for 5 years before I left corporates. In fact, I had multiple ones. So I was learning, I was training myself what I thought I needed to have to be an entrepreneur. But the thing is that entrepreneurship, unlike employment, so employment, you go and study stuff and put it in your brain and you put it on your CV. But people actually tend to hire you for your experience, the what you've actually done. This is the paradox. Now, in the game of entrepreneurship, the way you learn it is by doing it. No amount of trying to put it in your brain or studying it is going to help you. Maybe like 2% will help you. So your first thing you do after a job is like, you just got to try stuff. So my Bolero Zoom Ballet, I just tried it. And by the way, like, I've been an experienced entrepreneur up until I did a Zoom Ballet, but I just tried it. I just tried it and went, okay, how many dancers? Okay. And in fact, the idea of charging tickets was too terrifying. That's why I did donations, because I was just like, you know what, putting a price on it's too challenging. But if I say donation only, people can give whatever they want. And that felt more comfortable for me. And also, now that people have donated, I can actually get, now I know what the ticket prices are, because 31 people made donations. And now I can take an average of those donations to go, okay, well, it's approximately this. And that's what you do as an entrepreneur. You try something, you ask for money, you see how much money you get, you learn something, and you try again.
Oh gosh, you've said so many amazing things. I was speaking to Barbara Winter yesterday, and she was talking about that's the whole entrepreneurial mindset and way is like learning a new language. It's so different from your job and your corporate world, and what you said is absolutely correct. From personal experience, I was learning a lot. I mean, I'd read Barbara's books and so many other books. I'd done so many. This is probably 5-6 years before I took the leap, and nothing prepared me. I said as well to Barbara, I was like, you meet parts of yourself you didn't know existed.
Yeah, really dark places.
Oh my God. You meet parts of yourself you didn't know existed, and you grow. If you allow the process, if you give to the process, you allow yourself, you will grow. You will grow as a result. It's kind of like, it reminds me kind of like marriage. If you're trying to make marriage work and you're with this person and all the compromising and the working it out and everything, you grow as a result of the process. So that is just, That was just gold in itself. And you actually said something that I wanted to highlight a little bit, and that was in terms of money blocks. And I've heard you talk of money blocks, which is another aspect of yourself you meet, because it's terrifying asking for the sale, isn't it? It's always terrifying. So obviously, two things. There's so many things I want to talk about. But the first question I'd ask, which you're yet to talk on, is how do people actually... What would you advise for people who are wanting to make that leap, but they're afraid, obviously, and they as far as they're concerned, they can't make money doing what they love.
Okay.
What would you advise them to do?
Yeah. Okay. This is great, because I'm going to tell you what my business mentor told me, which I ignored for a couple of years. And then when I actually did it, it worked. So I'm going to save you all three years that you don't need to waste on this. So really simply, don't go it alone. And this is what everyone tries to do. They try to just start their own thing alone. Don't do that. So there will be some of you out there who are like Tose and I, who are pretty creative. So we have lots of ideas. So actually products, we just spit out products like in a day. Like that's like the easy part for us. The hard part for us is the selling, the grounding it, the improving it, the scheduling it to do it again, the continual process improvement to, you know, get the steady, to get steady revenue, which is so important in a business. So some of you might be like that. And others of you will be the ones that love the people and just want to sell. And some of you will be the ones that want to do the operations and the back end, like you want to make the stuff happen. Some of you will want to come in and analyze everything that's going on there and tell us how to improve it. So everyone has a different talent, and you really have to play to your talents. And the corporate world does not prepare you for what your talent, like, doesn't teach you what your talents actually are, because you have so many learned, you've learned so many skills to survive it. And just because you've got a skill does not mean it's a natural talent. It just means you've bashed yourself enough that you can do it. But me and macros and spreadsheets and VLOOKUPs, like, I just learned how to do that after 10 years last week. And it was like a major triumph. But I shouldn't be doing VLOOKUPs and spreadsheets. Not what I should be doing at all. Big waste of time for me. Much, much better things to focus on. So whatever kind of talent you have, take that talent and combine it with other people. Now, another recipe for disaster would be you're all startups at the same time. So if you and some of your corporate friends get together to create a business, this is also going to be another recipe for disaster. Go and look at where you want to add value to existing startups, because they're starting up, but they're already in existence. So plug in. So now I'm going to tell you what my mentor, Roger James Hamilton, told me 5 years ago now, when I was putting out these creations. Dinner at Downton Abbey, I'd actually booked Highclere Castle outside of London, and it was creating a Downton Abbey experience. It was when the show was still on.
Oh,
I just
wanted
to take people to Highclere Castle and have a Downton Abbey experience. Idea was very good. But I couldn't work out the financial model. The tickets had to be something like £500 a piece, and I couldn't sell those tickets. So it doesn't mean it was a bad idea. It was just, I didn't have a team that could execute it with me, you know? So what Roger, after all of mine, then I wrote Castle. Anyway, it's very embarrassing. If you look me up on Amazon, they're still there. I wrote tour guides about castles, UK castles and historical women. So fun. And sold about three. And
oh my God.
You know, I just wanted see Tose, the creations, they just keep coming, right?
I'm literally jumping on my seat because the things you're saying, oh my God. Okay, go on, sorry.
Anyway, not every idea needs to get implemented or
absolutely
get implemented. And
or,
every
or
idea
not every
needs
idea
to have the right people and the right team and the right
absolutely
implementation.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be you. It could be someone else. It could be an idea for someone else.
Exactly. But I was really suffering with all these creative out, like getting all these creative things out and nothing happening beyond that, and not making any money for myself either. In fact, they were very expensive hobbies. I was just throwing all my money into the business coaching to do these things that didn't make any money. And I'll never forget Roger. It was March. In fact, I can tell you it was March 2016. I think he was getting so annoyed at me that I just remember it was March 2016. I was on my monthly call, and he just kind of like, he didn't put his hands on his head, but like the look he gave me through the Zoom was just, Catherine, just go and serve other people. I've told you, I connected you with Bea Bankova of Jifu. Go and serve her. You have so much, there's so much alignment there. Just go and serve her, go and talk to her, go and serve her. And me like, my ideas was so resistant. So that's the second lesson. When people who you're either paying to give you advice or people that you respect and admire who have the kind of success you wanna have, when they tell you things, do them.
Listen and do them. Yes.
Do them.
Oh, man.
this is the turning point of the story. So I did go finally after a few years of resisting. So I did finally go and do what he said, go serve Bayat and Jifu. And I met Bayat. I'm going to be honest. She signed me up as her client. And I was kind of like, this wasn't what I had in mind, but you know what? I trust her. And what I, when I shared with her what I really wanted in my life was to leave my corporate job and start my own business. She was like, great. We're not a business coach. Like, we're not a business coaching company, but we're a transformational education. So if you transform yourself, you'll get whatever you want to get out of life. Mm. And I thought, okay. And later, after I'd gone through all of Jifu education, so Jifu, the Global Institute for Evolving Women, is a transformational education company for women, where we give women the tools to live their best lives ever, so that everyone in the world can live their best lives ever. So, you know, we're here to transform humanity through the aligned power of evolving women, and we start with ourselves, you know? So when I first became a client, I started getting unexpected results, which was I got to be happy. I got to get off that roller coaster of going, not good enough. I got relationships with my family and my husband. I got all these unexpected benefits. And since the pandemic, when I joined the team full time, I got the original what I wanted too, which was to have my own purposeful business, doing what I love and empowering women. And it never comes. So for those of you listening, it's never, you know, you think you can do it in a year. It might take 5 years. It might take 10 years. It might take 20 years. But the point is it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as you keep moving forward. And you can chunk down those big dreams. So with Jifu, I started as a client. Then I started as their marketing, like having a little monthly stipend for writing their email copy. Then I started mentoring on the programs. Then I just joined the team full time doing everything, you know? So it took many years, but I could see along the journey each year moving one step closer, you know, constantly moving closer. And then the crazy thing is once you get the dream, so once you're like, oh, wow, I had this dream 5 years ago to be in the team full time. Here I am. I'm in the team full time. Now what? Then you go, oh, it's time to scale up. Now I have new dreams, which aren't necessarily for me, but they're for the business. Like, oh, let's grow Jifu. What does it look like to have, instead of 100 women, 200 women in our programs? What does it look like instead of having 10 women in our impact circle to have 20 women in our impact? Like, what kind of impact can we make if our impact circle doubles? And then you get these new crazy dreams that you can't imagine. And again, one foot in front of the other, step by step, year after year.
Absolutely.
Get the dream. Create the dream, get the dream, create the dream, get the dream, create the dream.
That is just, I mean, I'm so glad you segued into the work that Jifu does, because I was obviously going to talk to you about that. And for those who didn't hear her when she said, it's an acronym for Global Institute for Evolving Women. And I joined the Facebook group earlier this year, and I hear what you're saying about it being such, you know, that the focus is on the person, the woman. Because the women I met and the women I, you know, just from observing, I know I, you know, sometimes respond to posts and stuff, but it was just such a genuineness and a kindness and a warmth that that is just so evident in the group. I haven't seen, I'm in a lot of Facebook groups and I haven't seen a lot of Facebook groups like that. So I think it's testament to what you're saying, that there is a lot of focus on working on you as a person. And to be honest, when you work as you as a person, so many other things follow suit, which is what you said. And you mentioned that you found your purpose as a result of working with them. And you said it is healing and leading the feminine. What exactly is that?
Yeah. So I'll share with you my purpose as it lives for me, and it might land on you any number of ways, from what is that to oh cool or something else. But how I understand my purpose for me is that I'm here to be a creative vortex, leading and healing the feminine in a creative and structured way. Mm-hmm. Now, when I first started discovering it, it lived for me like, I'm here to empower women. And then it evolved to, I'm here to lead and heal the feminine. So it's not just women, it's also men, but it's leading and healing the feminine. And now I won't share it again because it's too wordy, but now it lives for me as being a vortex, because being a vortex gives me more access and it gives me freedom because it's who I naturally am. So my purpose lives for me as a way of being, as opposed to something to accomplish or something to do. And that's why it's not that it's easy for me, but it makes it easier for me to, when I'm in activities that are aligned with that, for example, being here on this beautiful podcast today, like I'm being a demonstration of being a vortex. So just being with you all today is me being my purpose, walking my purpose, taking action aligned with my purpose. So it's a very in flow, nurturing and powerful experience for me. On the other hand, so I know, okay, I'm onto something here. Doing this kind of activity is aligned with my purpose. So that helps me what I say yes to and what I say no to. So if someone says to me, would you do a V lookup in this Excel spreadsheet? I'll go, that's not aligned with my purpose. I'm going to say no. I'm not a very good person for that. But I can, what I can do is I can share you the YouTube videos that I watch to learn it myself. There you go. You know, that's my service to you. But it's not to teach you, like, that activity is not aligned with my purpose. But it's an activity that could be a useful activity for helping the activity that I create to fulfill on my purpose. Someone should be doing VLOOKUPs somewhere, because we should have lots of data, because we should have lots of women doing our programs. So we should have lots of things to VLOOKUP in a spreadsheet. But that's not me, you know, that's probably more aligned with someone else's purpose, passion, talents. And it's about me connecting with the right people for those other things.
Yeah. So what, in your opinion, is an evolving woman?
Good question. So without using the word evolving in the description, which is so hard, right? So she's a woman who knows she's here for more than just the, you know, surviving. She's here to make a difference in the world. And she does that every day by who she touches, and is never, she's never the same. She's constantly shifting, growing, transforming, and probably doing it with her sister tribe of other evolving women too. Wow. Yeah. Bringing the new culture, bringing transformation to the world. And ladies, this is you. I hope it's resonating with you. I hope you recognize that it's you, and I see you. I see you all as evolving women.
So good. So good. What keeps you inspired, Catherine? I mean, you are this bubbly individual and you always seem like, you know, on that mission and always switched on. I'm sure that's not necessarily the case, but that's how you come across.
Yeah.
So what
you should have seen me this morning. Yeah. I'm going to answer that with a model that works really well for me. And if you want to read more about this, you can, on Amazon, there's a book called What My Soul Told Me by Richard Barrett. And it has a really beautiful model of the ego and soul dynamic. So the ego is concerned with things, and the ego's not bad, because we're taught to really vilify our ego, like ego bad, soul good, but they're both equally important. They just both have different functions, and it's important that both of them get what their function is. So the ego's role is to keep the soul safe and protected in this incarnation of its existence. So it deals with things like physical safety and security, having a roof over your head, having food, being nourished, money in the bank account, relationships with other people, you know, surviving other people, feeling happy, feeling like you're loved, feeling like you're good enough. You know, and esteem for women is a big, this is a big gap for us. Esteem.
It is a big one, yeah.
So, you know, this is the ego's world, and it's really important to get those ego needs handled, because if there's something that's not working, if there's a relationship that's you're feeling conflict in, or if you're not feeling good enough about yourself, or if you're worrying about having a roof over your head when in reality, you're very, very covered. Like, there's very little reason to actually be worried about losing your house. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people have real worry about that, and it's a real risk. Many, many, many more of us don't, but we think we do. So it's really important that you don't, that one, that you take care of these needs and you don't make them wrong, or you don't go, oh, you know, it's, you know, I'm not going to ask that client to pay me. I'm going to go be self-expressed. I'm going to go, my soul desires to be by the beach. I'm just going to go by the beach today. Your soul doesn't have needs like the ego does. Your soul has desires. So, you know, my soul desired to make a difference in the world, a desire to connect with other souls, desire to fulfill on its purpose. So I try to spend a really healthy balance looking at, you know, oh, have I got my ego needs handled? So I'll be honest. I woke up in Cyprus today. I flew in yesterday and I woke up feeling like I had a London hangover. And I don't mean hangover like I drank a lot, but just, you know, after a few weeks being back in London, I just felt really worn down. Mm. I'd eaten too many egg sandwiches. I'd like not slept enough. I'd gotten on the tube. I'd ridden the tube around for most of the day for like a few days in a row. And like, these aren't activities that are nourishing the body. Mm. Some of them nourish the soul. I met up with some amazing women. So there was some soul nourishment activities, but there was a lot of being hard on the ego activities as well. So when I woke up in Cyprus this morning, I have to be honest, I wasn't feeling like, yay, I woke up in Cyprus. I was feeling like, what the hell happened to me? I feel like I've been run over by a double-decker bus. So to generate myself, it's like, so you can't make yourself wrong. When you need to be doing the self-care, you need to be doing the self-care. So you can't be making yourself wrong, like, but you're in Cyprus living your dream life. You should just be happy at 8 o'clock in the morning, your first day there, you know, when you haven't even unpacked yet. Like, there's no point inventing stories or making yourself upset or feeling like you're ungrateful. Instead, I took it hour by hour. Like, okay, what's the first thing I need to do? The first thing I need to do is drink some water and take care of some body needs. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's the next thing I need to do? The next thing I need to do is eat breakfast. Mm-hmm. What's the next thing I need to do? I need to answer some emails. Okay. What's the next thing I need to do? Put on some makeup. So when you meet Tose this afternoon, you're feeling amazing, you know? So you just, it's like, you just got to, on every day-to-day basis, or even week to week, month to month, I just always look at, you know, dancing with that. What is my ego need to get handled? And what is my soul desire? And getting the two working together on it.
Yeah. In cohesion. Okay. So this is probably one of my, one question I've been dying to ask you ever since I heard the word you coined, and it's the wonderful concept of plirking. What exactly does that look like?
Yeah, great question. I'm doing that now. So plirking is my invented word, combining play and work. So it started because, first of all, work is not such a fun. We don't have a great association with the word work, do we, right? Mm. Work can be followed by hard work. We often put the word hard in front of it.
And then when we're trying to be smart, we say smart work.
Yeah, smart work. That's just a Band-Aid or a plaster, isn't it? That's not really a transformation, mm. No. So I wanted to really reinvent, as I was shifting from doing work that was hard work, and I mean, it was really hard work, shifting from out of that old paradigm into doing work that I love, that's fulfilling, that makes me money. So I married play and work Because to be honest, if you're doing your life's work, that doesn't need to be heavy either. It's about doing your life's work, but doing it with joy and freedom and fun, because you don't want to create, you don't, we already have hard work in existence. You don't want to create your life's work as a hard work too, because then that's not going to be fun.
No.
So plurking is play, is play work. You know, it's the grown up, like imagine when you were a student in school, imagine when you used to like school. So before school became hard, there was a point, kids love going to school up until they think it becomes hard. But if you remember back to when you were just, you were free to be curious and you were just free to learn and just, oh, what am I going to learn today? You know, is it the alphabet? Is it math? Is it show and tell?
Yeah. We're learning imagine through you play.
Could, yeah. Imagine you could recapture that. We can be grown-ups with the spirit of children, you know? And for me personally, what it looks like is plurking from places I really love. So in the pandemic, I've quote unquote locked down, plurked. I've plurked from London, Florida, the mountains of Northern Italy, the beaches of Sardinia. And after 2 weeks back in London, it was time to get to Cyprus. So for me, being able to work from anywhere is a really important structure for me to be plurking effectively. And in fact, the most effective I've been this whole year was this summer on the beach. So go figure, wow. that you can be relaxing on the beach and be the most effective of the whole year. Who knew?
Who knew? And it's exactly what you're saying. I totally agree. I think there was something in, you know, like you were saying in kindergarten, when they say the kids learn through play, there is a wisdom in that. And somehow we think we outgrow that, but I don't think we're ever meant to be. It's the reason I actually called the podcast Girl Unlimited. And if you notice, I use really bright colors and stuff. And the reason for that is because I'm trying to speak and inspire that person who, that the girl in the woman. You know, and it's really important to me. Anyway, I know this, you know, the podcast has gone a lot longer than I thought it would. I keep saying this and I'm like, because I just have all these questions that I want to ask. But I usually like to end my podcast with the question just before we find out where we can, you know, learn more about you and what you do and everything is, if you had an opportunity to speak to your 8-year-old self and pick an age, anywhere between 8 and 12, what would you say to her?
I would say, you know more than you know, and that grown-up people will tell you. So really trust yourself, trust your intuition. The grown-ups will keep you safe and secure, but you know what's right for you, and just keep doing what's right for you.
And what's next for you, Catherine?
Yeah, growing GIFU, more plurking, and really creating the next phase. It's creating family. Creating family is the next phase in my life.
Wow. Okay. And where can they find you? Where can our listeners find you?
Ladies, come and join us in our GIFU Women hashtag Together We Rise Facebook group. Just search GIFU Women on Facebook. Come into this group that Tose joined earlier this year. And let's have a conversation. So it's not one of those places where you just get a whole bunch of spam or it's hard to find. You know, it's a small intimate group of 2,000 women who really, you can ask anything, share anything, learn together, inspire together. And people like Tose keep reminding me that this isn't normal, this type of group that's really unique. So come and experience it. Come and connect. Come and be soul expressed in GIFU Women, hashtag Together We Rise on Facebook.
Thank you, Catherine. Honestly, guys, join GIFU. I assure you, if you have been in many groups and you're as jaded as I am, you will love this one. It's not the same as many other groups. If you're a woman and you're looking to grow and you're looking for just kindred spirits, you will meet them in GIFU, I can assure you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tose.
Catherine, it's been a wonderful time. Thank you. You, my friend, are a total rock legend for listening to this episode to the end. I hope you found value in it. And if you did, would you do me a quick favor? Would you rate and review this podcast on the platform you're listening? And if the platform you're listening doesn't have the facility to rate and review, then please share the episode with your friends and your loved ones. It will go such a long way in helping spread the word of this podcast. And until next time, remember, you're a unique, remarkably created person with a God-given purpose and unlimited potential. The question is, what are you going to do about it?
You think that nothing will become of me, that I'll never come to anything, but I rise, rise. Yes, you might have given up on me, 'cause you couldn't see